Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, this is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd. Today we're doing something a little different. I'm interviewing the creator and author of the website Cheese Science Toolkit, Pat Pawlowski. Hello, Pat.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. How are you today?
Very good. How are you doing?
Good, good. So for my book review segments, I have done one ebook, Jimmy Carbone's I Like Pig, but I don't think I've done a website author yet, so you're the first. Welcome.
Woohoo! I feel honored. Thank you.
Anyway, I have many questions about this. When did you decide to start this site?
I've been going back and forth for about a year and a half now, but actually funny, I was really bored in the airport last fall.
Uh-huh.
And so I took out my computer and just started putting it together. And from there, probably late December is when I really launched it earlier this year.
Okay. So we're talking fall 2015 was when you were bored in the airport?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Now, what is can you tell our listeners, what is your cheese background, first of all?
Sure. Well, I've been working for the Center for Dairy Research here in Madison, Wisconsin for almost a year and a half now.
Mm-hmm.
And I work a lot with cheese there, mostly on the sensory side of things. But mm-hmm. We do a lot of teaching, too, and this is sort of an extension from that. It's separate from there, but whenever I do something, my whole life revolves around it. So even in my free time, it's cheese now, too.
Okay. So you are very cheese-based.
That's right. Yeah, I love cheese. And on the weekends here in Madison, I work as a cheesemonger, too, in a local cheese shop.
Okay, which one?
It's called Fromage Nation. It's a really nice cut-to-order cheese shop, the only one like it in Madison.
I've been there because our American Cheese Society meeting was in Madison just a few years ago, and it's right nearby the square, or is it on the square?
It is on the square, yeah.
It's very nice. Now, also, I want to know, do you have a writing background?
Not really. Nothing formal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've made websites a lot, and I do a lot of outreach and education and sciences just mm-hmm. through local schools and volunteering. But no formal training in writing or anything like that.
Okay.
That's probably why if anyone digs deep enough, they find a lot of typos.
And what about, have you studied website development? Is that in your background also?
That's just been a hobby I've had for years now. I've made a bunch of different little websites throughout the years. And
okay.
It's really nice if I can take that hobby and actually apply it to something I'm passionate about.
Yeah.
It's a good venue for that.
Great, great. So did you go to University of Wisconsin at Madison?
I didn't. I'm a trader.
You're a trader. Where did you go?
I went to school at Purdue in Indiana for food science.
For food science. So your degree is in food science?
Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We didn't actually study much dairy there. Indiana's not a big dairy state.
Oh, but. Okay. Did you move to Madison after college, or were you from Madison?
No, yeah, I moved to Madison after I got out of school.
Mm-hmm. So that's why you're a trader?
That's right, yeah. Yep, I'm a badger now.
Okay. How long from getting the idea to make a website, from actually starting to now?
Probably 6 months or so. Well, okay. No. Oh, the time's really flying by. Probably almost a year, okay. And a couple months now.
Okay. Do you have any funding?
No, everything's in my free time.
And oh, wow.
I pay for the space, for the web, for the name and the hosting,
right.
Just out of my pocket. But I host other websites, too, so this wasn't too much more
okay.
of an expense.
Now, it's cheesescience.org. That's how you
correct.
Find it, not toolkit. The word toolkit is not in the formal name.
No, I decided against that because I thought that might be too much to type.
Okay. Now, how do you get an org? I never tried to get a dot org. What do you have to prove to get an org? Anything?
As of, I think, 2006 or 2007, nothing. You just have to pay for it.
Oh, okay. So you pay for the name.
I pay for cheesescience.org.
Okay.
Cheesescience.com was taken, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now, how many hours a week do you put into the website?
It varies week by week, but as of late, I've sort of been petering off a little bit, taking some projects I did last year and just porting them over to the website. But on average, I'd say at least 10 hours a week of actually on the website working on things, another couple hours here or there on social media trying to up my view count, those kinds of things.
Right. And so you have other jobs?
I'm sorry?
You have other jobs. Do you have a full-time job or are you, bounce around?
Yeah, no, I work full-time for the Wisconsin Center for Dairy Research as a cheese scientist of sorts, I suppose.
Okay. Has your vision for the site changed or developed as you've been going along?
It has, actually. So originally, the goal of my site was my primary audience was cheesemongers. I've been working as a cheesemonger for a couple months, and with my full-time job at the university, we offer courses towards cheesemongers. So I got a lot of interaction with them, and I thought that was all it's going to be about is just teaching the cheesemonger. But as more and more people find out about it, other areas of cheese people that are besides cheesemongers that find it very useful. And so I've tried to broaden the audience to encompass some of those folks, too.
Okay. And do you respond... is there a lot of discussion? I noticed that you can respond to different chapters and some have conversations and some don't. Do you have a lot of responses from readers asking for things or discussing topics?
Yeah, maybe not so much. I do have comments on all the pages here or there. People comment, but I do get a lot of emails from people requesting topics or asking to clarify some topics or making, a different post about a similar topic, those kinds of things.
That's nice.
Right now I'm just adding those to a list. I'll get to them one day.
Right. Now, so far you have 32 topics, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. And you have, and then you are you've got a list of the ones that might come next.
I do, and to be honest, that list isn't really up to date right now.
That's not what you're working on?
Yeah, I'm working. It's actually funny. It sort of mirrors sometimes the work I'm doing for my job. I'm already working on that, and I might as well write up a quick post and post it on here.
Oh, excellent idea. Yeah, you might as well just summarize what you're working on or what research you're doing so that you add more easily to the site.
No, definitely. And it feels like less of the time sink that way, too.
Yeah. Now, when will it ever be complete? Ever?
I've been asking myself that a lot lately because I'm starting to reach a point where I definitely don't have everything covered on the site, but I have a list going where I'm saying it's almost every single topic I can think of or people have asked me about regarding cheese science.
Okay, good.
What happens when I reach the end of that? I don't know.
Right. Right. What were the first three topics that you started on? Do you remember?
Yeah. So I actually keep a chronological list just to for my own sanity.
Mm-hmm.
I post about milk chemistry. Mm-hmm. So I figure it'd be nice to start off a cheese science study talking about what cheese is made of, milk.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then two others that I had gotten a lot of questions about in my various cheese-related responsibilities here in Madison about the crystals in cheese, the crunch that you get with some cheeses.
Right.
And then cheese color. Why is cheese yellow, or why mm-hmm. is cheese orange, or why mm-hmm. is cheese really white sometimes? So those are the big three.
Okay.
Milk, color, and crystals, yeah.
I would say color and crystals are probably more, a little less scientific. I mean, even though the answer might be scientific, but they're more cheese eaters want to know those answers.
No, definitely, yeah. I mean, I got some feedback for my first few posts, and mm-hmm. I the goal for the site was science for non-scientists, and I'm still working on figuring out what the proper balance of that
is. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because some of your topics are harder than others, and some are written more, you know, at a higher level than others, I'd say.
No, definitely. That's maybe if I had a real background in science writing, I could do a better job, but right now
I think you've done a great job. I think, you're trying, and what I liked is that it's not too much. You know, they're short answers, some shorter than others. You have those brief bites and then the longer discussions. And you cover, just for the listeners who have not looked, you cover a lot of different topics like cheese types, which might be more traditional topic, and then you've also got a topic called sheepy and sulfur and fatty acids. So those are, you know, you've got quite a good array of things to look up on your site.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I really try to make it, maybe for my own sanity more than anyone else's, I try to vary the areas I write about that make them interesting.
Mm-hmm. So when you first started, you planned that cheesemongers would be your audience. And then when people write in, can you tell what level they're at? Are they just cheese eaters? Are they cheesemongers? Are they distributors?
Yeah, so I get a lot of distributors, a lot of cheesemongers, mm-hmm. my main audience. Mm-hmm. But not so many regular consumers yet. And I don't think the site, for someone who isn't really passionate about cheese, the site would probably be a little too much for them. Maybe I'll make a corollary one day.
Right.
But a lot of cheese marketing people, too. So a lot of cheese companies have been getting a lot of, and some cheese makers, too. I never thought that cheese makers would find the stuff useful. But I guess because of some topics that are really specific to the things they work on, they can find mm-hmm. those posts interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what about, do you know about the Certified Cheese Professional Exam?
I do, yeah. And actually, I've heard from a few of the certified trainers who help teach today, and help prepare some of the candidates for the exam. And they use it as a reference for themselves in some cases.
Yeah.
To help reinforce what they teach. Yeah, so that was very nice to hear.
Yeah, because there's a lot of science on the test, I believe. And it's a nice way to quickly look things up.
Thanks for saying that.
I think it'd be really useful for, or last minute panic for people taking the test.
No, definitely. And again, a lot of self-interest here, but I'm planning on taking the test in a couple months here. So this is also a great study tool for me.
Oh, you're going to go to Des Moines and take the test?
Yeah, I'm signed up.
So. Oh, cool. Now, you know, the site, in ACS, there's the judging competition for cheese. Do you know about that?
Yep.
So we have in that competition technical judges, which to me are like mostly the science guys or girls from Wisconsin. And then we have aesthetic judges who are more cheesemongers, tasters, you know, that kind of person. And I feel like your site is written by technical judges for aesthetic people.
No, that's a really good observation. I like how you phrase that.
Yeah.
I definitely agree that that's the goal. It's just sort of taking some knowledge and interpreting in a different way from a different perspective. Yeah.
Now, and so you say mostly these are the topics are your own ideas. You haven't too much branched out into requests.
I've started to every now and then. If a request is sort of a low-hanging fruit, I try to knock those out.
Okay.
The flavors have been a lot of requests. It's how my little cheese bite, just a paragraph or two about each flavor.
Okay.
So my line of work, I do sensory, so flavors is what I do all day, every day. So if I have a free couple hours, I just knock it out real quick.
Okay.
And most people seem to be really well receptive to those.
Mm-hmm. Now, flavor is a particular area of cheese science, right?
I'd say so, at least, yeah.
Maybe
I'm biased because that's what I do.
and is it, have they totally figured out taste and flavor?
Oh, definitely not. It's still...
Still
every day more finding out more things.
Yeah.
We like to think, you know, most scientists, and myself included, we like to say, oh, this flavor is caused by this chemical compound,
right.
And that's the end of the story. But that's going to be further from the truth. We could take that compound, put it in water, and smell it, and it smells nothing like a cheese would smell. So really complicated menagerie of things going on in cheese.
Right, and also from the person tasting, you can have 10 people taste one cheese, be all over the place, liking it, not liking it, describing it. Then you have people with different taste buds. It's pretty up in the air when you get to people's senses.
No, definitely. Yeah. I mean, we oftentimes have blinders on. We think of everything from the cheese's perspective. But when you bring in human anatomy and physiology, it makes it next times more complicated.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I notice sometimes in some of the write-ups, you almost have disclaimers of this isn't the whole story or this, you know, were you nervous that you'd be held responsible?
I guess I don't think so. I'm not like I'm under a shotgun or anything right now, but the nature of these posts where I'm having to sort of present things in a simple light, not going fully into depth. Some of these posts, if I went into depth, would be pages and pages. You'd be scrolling all day to read it.
Right.
So
erring
on the side of simplicity, sometimes you get incorrectness by leaving things out every now and then. So I always like to disclaim, at a surface level, this is what's going on, but it's just like what happens in school, right? Your first year of school, you teach something, and 5 years later, you get taught something and said, well, what they taught you earlier was right, but not the whole story.
Right. It's much more complicated.
Yeah, and that's also harder to write about, so it's a win-win for me.
Right. Now, I also notice you have a variety of excellent references at the end of every topic. How do you select them, and do you need people's permission?
Yes and no. I mean, everything I link is you can just find from a Google search.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And those kinds of things. And most of them are just published books or articles, those kinds of things. So I don't think I need permission, at least I hope not. Well, after they heard this, I might be shut down next
no,
week.
No, I don't think so. Now, just to give the listener an example, one thing... you used Dairy Pipeline, an article in the Dairy Pipeline. It was written by a frequent technical judge, Mark Johnson, from Wisconsin, on a topic. So, you know, the person who's interested in finding out more can go to the link and read a whole complicated article.
Yeah, so my idea with those were, that's the next step. So my posts are simplifying what those articles we'll talk about here or there, and I know Mark really well. I work with him, those kinds of things, and I know for some of these areas he is the expert to talk to. So you do yourself a disservice by not reading what he's written on the subject.
Right, and when I went to one of them, you find the whole journal, and then it's got a bunch of interesting articles by a bunch of the well-known technical judges. From being in the American Cheese Society, you know them.
Yeah, so, you know, it's good press, I guess, for my place of employment, too, by Lincoln Deserving.
Yeah.
Getting them out there more.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we're going to take a break. I'm talking to Pat Pawlowski, creator of Cheese Science Toolkit, which is at cheesescience.org, and we'll be back after a very short break.
This program is brought to you by the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, period. Why? Lush grasslands, glacial water supply, fourth generation cheesemakers, combining old world tradition with the new ideas and highest standards. The very best milk. What do you think of when you think of Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds, delicious fresh cheese curds, or deep-fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Upland's Cheese Company, the operation behind the Pleasant Ridge Reserve cheese that's literally America's most awarded cheese. I think of the deliciously stinky Limburger and its long-storied history. I think about Raleigh's Dumbarton Blue, a perfect blend of English-style cheddar and notes of blue. I think of Emmy Roth's Grand Cru Sirsois, which was named 2016's World Champion at the World Championship Cheese Contest. Wisconsin is like the world champion of cheese, and once you start reading the list of cheeses made in Wisconsin on their website, you can see why. The Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board is a nonprofit organization funded entirely by Wisconsin's dairy farm families. Read more at eatwisconsincheese.com, and as soon as you're done listening to this podcast, eat Wisconsin cheese. It's a no-brainer.
Hi, I'm back with Pat Pawlowski at Cheese Science Toolkit. How are you doing, Pat?
Good, good.
Did you hear the advertisement? It was all about eating Wisconsin cheese.
That's right.
So we're talking to Wisconsin and we're advertising Wisconsin, which is great. And they could just go to your store and buy some on the weekend.
That's right, yes, and they can stop by Babcock Hall and watch it being made.
Right. So are there any competitors site-wise? Are there other cheese sites I don't know about?
Sorry, I'm shooting myself in the foot by talking. No, I'm joking.
Well, it's not just advertising.
Part of the reason I started the site is I couldn't find one with information like this. That's the reason I started the site mainly was I found a gap, and I wanted to fill that gap.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the closest you could probably find is from the Culture magazine. They have occasional posts.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can always find textbooks about cheese and journal articles about cheese, but none of those are really broad enough to be interesting to a wide group of people.
Yeah, and they're very dryly written, and yeah, I think only people studying are going to read those.
Right, and visual. I've yet to find any place online, books included, that I wanted every post to have at least one visual to go with it.
Okay.
And in many cases, many more. Mm-hmm. Pictures and interactive things like that.
Mm-hmm. I do like your, it's a picture of rennet, the chymosin?
Oh, yeah.
Is that how you say it, chymosin?
Chymosin, that's right.
Yeah. It's, apparently it doesn't work on all computers, but on mine it's like this rotating, colorful molecule thing that looks very cool.
Yeah, and see that's dead simple to do. So there are databases with all these various enzymes and proteins and things. And it was just a matter of finding a viewer online.
Right.
The one I used, 3D Mole, that's an open source one, free to use for educational purposes. And you just sort of import the file you want to show and then dress it up. And
but
simple as that. And I think you can't really glean any new information off of it, but I just like looking at it. It's pretty.
It's pretty. Yeah, it's got nice colors and it's pretty. And it might help you imagine what's going on if you're, you know, scientifically stunted, which I consider myself. did you have Do you have any cheese experts helping you write?
Not directly, no.
Okay.
I mean, I work with them, and I've learned a lot from them every day. So.
Yeah. Who were your favorite cheese teachers or mentors?
Exactly, yeah. I have a lot of cheese mentors in my life in various forms, and you know, their information gets filtered through me and through questions people ask and requests, and they come out on here.
Mm-hmm. Who, any ones in particular you feel like you've learned a lot from?
Everyone at the Center for Dairy Research I work with, I've learned so much from those folks.
Mm-hmm.
Or going there, I had some cheese and dairy experience from what I learned at school and from working in some places, but everyone there I've learned so much from, so I'm really thankful for the center for just teaching me and allowing me to really find a cool area of food that I never would have gotten this deep into if it wasn't for them.
Now, Purdue didn't study much cheese?
Not much, no. Okay. We like to say we're a carbohydrate campus there. We do a lot of starches. And
oh, okay. A carbohydrate campus, that's funny. And how do you see the two sides, technical and aesthetic, or science and taste, learning from each other and influencing each other?
I think you can't have one without the other, without having a big gap in your picture. You need both.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, so, you know, from the technical side, I mean, the aesthetic side is what matters at the end of the day. We can know exactly how cheese is made, all the chemistry in it, but it doesn't taste good.
Right.
All that work was for nothing, really.
Mm-hmm.
And the other side, if the cheese doesn't taste good, how do you fix it? And that's
right.
Where the technical side comes in.
Right, right. It does seem that as time is going on, the two sides are wanting to learn more from each other or, you know, more receptive.
No, definitely. I think that's part of the beauty of how ACS does judging. You have a first, you have two people side by side looking at different viewpoints and learning a lot from each other and the cheese.
Right. Now, I think at one point used the phrase in the site that you want to be a springboard for more study. Do you recommend particular books to students who want to learn more science?
Yeah, and it depends at their level and if they don't want to. You know, we have a luxury here being part of the university. We get a lot of those books and articles for free because we have subscriptions. But the Dairy Pipeline, that through my employer, I know now it sounds like I'm just a shill, but it really is a great resource dating back, you know, a couple decades coming out every quarter. And there's just a wealth of information there. It's presented, it's for cheesemakers, so the level of knowledge might be a little above consumers, but, you know, if you're reading it a couple times, you can glean a lot of information from it.
Now, talking more specifically about things that you bring up on the site, one thing you introduce is that many books and many systems often use firmness as the way to divide up cheese types, and you recommend how the cheeses are made to differentiate cheese types. Can you describe your chart of cheese types a bit and the thinking that went behind it?
Sure. So, I mean, the arrangement actually isn't mine. I cited it. It comes from a textbook called Dairy-Based Ingredients. And it's been recreated in many different forms. I know Dr. Donnelly's book that came out last year, year before, Cheese and Microbes, there's a whole chapter about cheese organization, and there's something similar to that from what I've produced. So, and the idea here is just think about how a cheesemaker would think about cheese. A cheesemaker would never consider a soft goat cheese being similar to a ricotta.
Right.
Because, you know, they're made in different ways, they require different equipment, different processing steps from him. So he would never put those two in the same category. He always differentiated by how they were made.
Right, even though they might be a similar softness.
Exactly. And just I like to think of as processing steps and the ingredients they'd have to buy or the equipment they'd have to buy and how they make the cheese, which I think by looking at it from that way, it forces you to learn more about the process overall, which I think is also helpful.
Right, right. But looking at your chart, my only argument is One of the categories, bacteria ripened internally, is a really big category and has a lot of different tasting cheeses.
No, definitely. I mean, no chart's going to be perfect. I know I've gotten a lot of flack for this chart since I put it out there. That's the funny thing.
Yeah, I mean, because it's just, I mean, the way the consumer wants to view cheese is more taste. They don't care how it's made, but, you know, usually.
Exactly, and taste mm-hmm. is a big one. And mm-hmm. that's also another reason I disagree with the firmness method of sorting cheeses, because at the end of the day, does the consumer know the difference between semi-soft and soft and semi-firm
right.
and firm?
Right.
No, but they can probably tell flavor, but
yeah,
that chart would be really big. It wouldn't fit on a screen so well.
Okay. Now, another funny part is the cheese grating terms that I ran into. It's such a long list.
Right, yeah. And those, again, those are straight from our state Department of Agriculture.
Right.
Consumer Protection Code, Chapter 81.
Now, but I have a couple questions. Your list doesn't clarify if the words are good or bad. Can they be
right?
good or bad or either, some of those words?
Definitely. I mean, some of these are always going to be defects, but
right.
in other cases,
right.
they're acceptable or wanted in some cheeses,
right.
never wanted
right.
in others. And,
right.
maybe it's wanted when it's young and not when the cheese is old and vice
right.
versa.
Right. Now,
I like to think of crystals that way, the crystals you see on aged cheddar.
Yeah.
I mean, for consumers going to a big box store and buying mild cheddar to grate and put on top of baked potatoes, they never want to see crystals.
Right.
But to the consumer going to a specialty store and buying a 10-year-old artisan cheddar, it's an expectation.
Right, right. Some of the words that, just to tell the listeners, like mealy and mottled, those sound bad. Right?
Really, yeah. I mean, so talking about mealy just describes, you know, it sort of breaks up into bits when you rub
yeah.
it or when you
yeah.
chew on it. And some
mm-hmm.
cheeses are going to be mealy, no way around that.
Okay.
Or grainy.
Right.
Like Parmigiano
right.
Reggiano is going to be grainy. It's going
right.
to feel like you're
right.
chewing sand after a while. And that's,
right. But it's a
that's
mistake.
That's what you want from that cheese.
Right, but it's a mistake in other cheeses.
Exactly, right.
right.
I don't think anyone would ever want a medium cheddar that tastes great, that feels gritty in
right.
the mouth.
Right. And then there was crumbly and curdy. Those don't have to be insults.
No, exactly, right?
right
yeah,
those, right.
Each has their place.
Yeah. Now, what was, did I see frog mouth?
Well, frog mouth.
What is frog mouth?
That describes a type of opening in cheese. So eyes, the holes in Swiss cheese eyes, if they have cracks on either end.
Yeah.
And a big hole in the middle, you know, it's supposed to resemble a frog's mouth.
Oh, okay, okay. And is that bad?
Usually, yeah.
Usually okay.
Slips or cracks in a cheese is unwanted. It means the cheese mm-hmm. wasn't flexible enough to move around the gas that was being produced there. So
okay.
it's split and cracked instead of forming eyes.
Okay. And what's the word strubel?
Which word?
Strubel.
Can you spell it? I'm not even sure I know that word.
S-T-R... E-U-B-L-E.
Oh, strubel. I'm sorry, strubel, yep. Again, this is sort of a... So here it's the idea, when you look at a Swiss cheese, you want good eye development, good size, but also good distribution. You want them to be across the whole interior of the cheese, and maybe not, you know, 1 inch around the surface. 1 inch border on the cheese is free of eyes. It makes it easier to cut and slice, those kinds of things. But
mm-hmm.
Strubel is, you know, you cut a piece of cheese in half and just... Near the surface, there's a bunch of little eyes all clumped there together.
Ah. Okay. Okay. Now, where are you at? Your topic of pasteurization is very factual. Where are you at on the topic of raw milk cheese?
Oh, great. Now we're getting to the controversial thing.
The politics.
I was very deliberate when I wrote that post to not even...
You were very good. You're very dry and factual and scientific.
Right, I even avoided discussions of flavor because I didn't want to start a fight.
Well, and that's appropriate for your site. You don't want to start fights. But do you have an opinion that's different, or do you love to eat raw milk cheese?
I like any cheese when it's good. Mm-hmm. And I've had great raw milk cheeses. I've had great pasteurized milk cheeses. I've had great heat-treated cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
I think cheese and good cheese is much more dependent on quality of the milk, quality of the cheesemaker, skill of the cheesemaker, and how well it was taken care of. And and if it happens to be raw or happens to be pasteurized, then all the better.
Okay.
Either way, for me, I just like good cheese.
Okay. So you're giving me a careful answer.
That's right. I'm training to be a politician.
Okay. Now, I have a question. Do you tend to gravitate? Do you mostly eat Wisconsin cheeses? Do you mostly eat American? Do you love European cheeses as well?
I like all cheese, but I'm so lucky and spoiled to be living where I am that I indulge in a lot of Wisconsin cheeses all across the board.
Right, right. And you must have a lot at the store or in the lab.
Right, both, yeah. I'm surrounded by cheese.
Okay.
Like living in heaven.
That's what we cheesemongers feel. We're living in heaven. Now, I have a question. Are all cheese scientists, or most cheese scientists, as fanatical about food as the cheesemonger is? That's my question.
I guess it depends. I mean, I consider myself a junior in training cheese scientist, to be honest. There are the rock stars out there I hope to be one day.
But right.
For me, I'm really obsessed with cheese, put it bluntly, and I love cheese. And I know people in the line of work where they work in the technical side of food and cheese, and they eat cheese, but they're not going to rant and rave about it and, you know, drive an hour and a half to pick up a cheese they really like, those kinds of things.
Right,
of course, that sounds a little fanatical when I put it that way. But.
Right, right. But many of us have done it.
Right, exactly, right.
That's right. Right, okay. Well, thank you very much. I encourage all the listeners to check out cheesescience.org to read some of your topics and respond and ask you more questions. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Diane. Thanks for having me so much.
Okay. Next month, July 18th, I'll be discussing the book Cured, Handcrafted Charcuterie and More, which is by Charles Wechselbaum. So I look forward to having him on the show in a month. And thank you, Pat Pawlowski.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.